Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, and welcome to Forever 35, a podcast about the things we do to take care of ourselves. I'm Dori Shafrir.
And I'm Kate Spencer.
And we are not experts.
But we are two friends who like to talk a lot about serums.
We do. And the serums that we talk about and anything else that we talk about is always on our website, forever35podcast.com. We also have another podcast that we do daily weekdays called Here For You that we'll be doing as long as the global pandemic is raging. And we are executive producing another podcast called Gee Thanks Just Bought It. If you haven't listened to this show yet, I highly recommend the episode that Caroline did last week
with Tom Everett Scott. It's amazing.
It is iconic. I would call it iconic.
Also, I really enjoyed his suggestions, his suggested products.
Yes. Yes, he's just an all-around great dude.
What a charmer. Yeah.
What a charmer.
And you know what, Dori? People can call us.
Yes.
Did you know that? It's 781-591-0390. And our email is forever35podcast@gmail.com. And we really love to hear from you. So don't hesitate. Please reach
really,
out.
Really, don't
we
hesitate. Love it. Anytime.
Yep. Nope, we need you.
And if you want to commune with other Forever 35 listeners, you can join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/Forever35podcast. And you can follow us on Instagram at Forever 35 podcast and on Twitter at Forever 35 pod.
Dori.
Yes, Kate.
How you doing over there this week?
You know, I'm sitting at my new desk.
Oh, well, hello.
It's a new desk for me, but it is our former dining room table.
So it's a bigger desk for you.
It's a bigger desk. We moved it to a different spot in the room. I believe I talked on this podcast about the new shelving unit that I got for my office.
Oh, you did. Your IKEA shelving unit.
Yes, my IKEA shelving unit. So it is sitting sort of in front of that unit, making a lovely backdrop for any Zoom calls that I might have to go on.
Which is what is most important right now.
Exactly. I look at everything and I just get happy. It feels super cozy and nice. I really, really like it. Yeah, I'm very happy about it. Can I say what else I'm doing in my office?
Give us the rundown. You're really nesting.
I am nesting. So because I'm using the dining room table, there are no drawers in this situation because it's a table, not a desk. So I ordered a small like file cabinet / under desk drawer situation. Like it has one big drawer on the bottom. That's a file drawer. And then it has two drawers on top and it's white. And then the front of it is pale pink, and it matches the trays on my desk. It's from the brand Poppin. Perhaps you're familiar.
I'm not familiar, but okay.
I was like, pink, is that like, but I was like, you know what, I really like this pink. It looks really nice, really pops, and I'm just gonna go for it. I'm really just like leaning into it being like my space, like this is my zone.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I know.
That sounds great. Good for you. I love that you have spot that is all your own.
Yeah. It just feels really nice. I got a couple of fake plants.
Mm-hmm. I love fake plant.
From Target. They have a great selection of fake succulents.
You know, I have some Target fake plants in my house. I have IKEA fake succulents. Also a great spot for your fake plant needs. But yeah, yep, Target.
Yep, yep. Yeah. Well,
and you know, fake plants are shockingly expensive.
Yeah, they're not so cheap.
No, like have you ever tootalooted over to West Elm to see what their fake plants cost?
I have not.
Well, take that ride because
over there?
Tootaloot over to westelm.com because of spare time today. I'm glad you found that your needs were met at Target.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I also, Kate, got a big whiteboard.
Well, now we're talking. For just like notes to yourself, are you keeping a schedule?
Yeah, notes to myself, schedules, maybe an inspirational quote or two. I don't know.
Adore, you are really leaning in here and I like it.
You inspired me. With your whole whiteboard situation, I was like, you know, I feel like that could really help me. Although, can I just say, do you find this also as a left-handed person writing on whiteboards is very annoying?
They're the worst. And I actually had to explain this to my left-handed child because my older daughter is right-handed and she loves to update our whiteboards. And then my 7-year-old got in the action and I was like, I have a life lesson for you as a left-handed person. Whiteboards suck and there's just no way around it. So yes, they are annoying and I have had to kind of like learn how to write on them without where like my hand is raised and so my handwriting is much sloppier. But I don't know any other way to just continuously like post information in my home.
I know. Same. But I've just sort of accepted it. It's so annoying.
If anyone can invent a whiteboard for left-handed people, that's basically
that like?
It can't exist, so that's the challenge.
It's basically like a pen and paper.
Yeah. I mean, I had left-handed notebook. I mean, you can also just like turn a notebook upside down, but I had left-handed notebooks in middle and high school.
Yeah, I did too.
the plight of the left-handed.
The plight of the lefty. A couple things that I'm working on in my office, like tweaking. The table is like just too high. I think it's like an inch or two higher than my desk was. And my desk chair doesn't raise any more than I have it. And so I feel like I'm just like slightly off ergonomically.
Is this why you asked me for a link to my chair butt pillow?
Yes. Yes, it was, Kate.
Oh.
I did not end up getting the one that you sent me.
That's okay. Get whatever you want, but you are getting a butt pillow. You are committing to this life.
A butt pillow has been ordered. And I'm not only am I getting a butt pillow, I'm also getting an under desk ergonomic footrest.
Well, now this is intriguing.
Because I realize if I raise my seat, then my legs will probably be too short. Like, I feel like everything is sort of like, it's a ripple effect, right? Like, you raise your seat, your legs don't reach the floor. Like, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
So, I have to raise my seat, but now I also need something to rest my feet on. Hence, the footrest.
Now, a regular stool is not...
No, I got one recommended by the wire cutter.
Okay.
They have a whole thing on footrests.
Oh my God.
I got this adjustable ergonomic blah, blah, blah. So I'll link to it. And hopefully all of my ergonomic issues will be solved. But other than that, I'm very happy with my cozy nook.
Congratulations for creating a space that's all your own, Dory.
Thank you so much. How are you doing?
You know, I need to bring up something that makes me very uncomfortable. And that is feet.
Mm-hmm.
I need to talk about feet. Dory, my feet are ravaged. They are. So I was getting gel pedicures on my toenails for probably years.
Oh, like, wow. Okay.
I'd get a gel pedicure. I'd leave it on for like 3 months. It would grow out ridiculously long, and then I would get it redone.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and mm-hmm. In December, I got a regular pedicure with regular polish. And then I painted my own nails like at the start of social distancing. So let's say five or six weeks ago.
Okay.
And finally, I removed the polish. And what I was left beholding was not a pretty sight. My toenails appear to be in very bad shape.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Like, I think I need to do some healing work on my toenails.
Okay.
Now, I don't even know what I am describing. Like, they have like little white, like maybe calcium marks, or I don't know if it's like little dent indentations. There's maybe a slight bit of yellowing, which makes me worried. Do I have a fungus? I have literally not looked at my toenails for years. And I just recently am like, well, I guess I'm going to use this time to heal my toenails.
Yeah. I mean, so I typically get dark polish on my toenails, which like you're not really supposed to do.
Yeah. Wait, why is that? I always do that too, but it's actually not good for toenails.
It's not good for your toenails, especially given how long I leave the polish on.
What does it do?
Okay, I just did a little Googling, and okay, yep. It's not a good idea to leave nail polish continuously on your toes all summer. Your nails are much more permeable than your skin. As a result, they can soak up substances such as nail polish that are applied to their surface. The danger with keeping your nail polish on too long is that the pigment in the nail polish can soak into the top few layers of the nail and dry it out. When that happens, fungus, yeast, bacteria, mold, and mildew can develop underneath the nail plate. Lovely.
Great news. Great news.
I'm taking my polish off today.
This was news to me. I have literally never considered what the polish is doing to me. I mean, I know that sounds so absurd and like I'm doing a poor job taking care of my nails. I've just never thought about it.
Okay. Well, so this article I'm reading from the Cleveland Clinic has some suggestions. Do you want to hear them?
Yes, yes, yes.
So it turns out the same permeability that created the stain can help to ease it as well. And this doctor advises applying vitamin E oil or coconut oil to the nail and nail bed underneath the nail where it meets the skin and gently rubbing it in when you do not have nail polish on.
Okay, so tonight I begin oiling my toes. Okay. Mm-hmm.
If you remove your toe polish and your toenails are stained, you can tell if the stain is from polish if you see your natural pink nail color grow out from the cuticle. The stain should fade slightly over time and eventually grow out.
All right.
And they recommend against using nail polish during the grow out period.
Oh, no. I am now fully in grow out nail toenail mode. Like I'm going to use this time to really work on my feet.
Great. I think this is great for you.
You know, maybe this is like exposure therapy where I have to look at my feet and like do stuff to them and maybe I'll learn to love feet. But I would love any like listener recommendations for foot products. I will not do a baby feet foot mask. That's not in the cards for me. But please give me all your toenail fixing advice. I also like I had massive calluses from running and I scraped those off recently because I don't really run anymore.
Mm.
And that was also nice. Like it was a lot. It was like mm-hmm. years of buildup. So I don't know. Maybe this is when I really do some work around my relationship with toes.
I am so into this for you.
Oh, God. Thanks. Because
I feel like this is really going to pay dividends. Are you still using your yoga toes?
No. I like look at them at night and then I'm like, I don't feel like doing this. I just want to get into bed. Mm. I don't understand what yoga toes does for me. Like, what is it going to do? What is the promise of yoga toes?
It like stretches and separates your toes. So it I think it just like makes your feet healthier.
All right. I should do it. I mean, I don't have any good excuse.
Like, it relaxes your muscles.
Okay, that is good.
It claims it increases circulation.
Great. You know, I could just be wearing them right now while we podcast. Maybe I'll try that.
Oh, should we both wear yoga toes while we podcast?
Yes, let's do it. Do you want to do it for the next main episode or the main episode we're recording? Okay, next week, you and I are committing to yoga toesing for as long as we can during an episode.
Okay. You might have to remind me.
That's fine. We'll make a note of it. And okay. I feel like Sam, our project manager, will also be on it. So
okay, great. Thank you,
we've
Sam.
We've got this. We've got this. Yoga toes next week. Why not? And we'll see how long we can last, because I can't hang more than like 10 minutes in those yoga toes.
Yeah, you're supposed to like build up.
Are you at like an hour?
No, because I don't, like I wear them, I put them on at night when I'm writing in my one line a day journal and then in my regular journal. And sometimes I'll keep them on if I'm like reading a bit, but like I don't find them very comfortable to lie down in. So,
yeah.
So if I want to like really relax, I just take them off.
I get like a strange claustrophobic feeling every time I put them on. I don't know how to describe
it. Oh, interesting.
Yeah. You know, though, I like the idea of oiling my toenails because I have been oiling my fingernails, just trying to give them some love.
Yeah.
Especially because I'm moisturizing my hands every 2 seconds.
Yeah.
So I'm into this oiling.
Yeah. I should do it too. I need to take this nail polish off my toenails.
Take that nail polish off and see what lies underneath.
Yes. I got to just take it off.
How have we never talked about this before? Like, I honestly cannot believe that dark nail polish is bad for your toenail. I had no idea.
Yeah. The last time I got a pedicure, the person, or no, 2 times ago, the person was like, you know, you really should not be. He was basically like, if you're going to get dark polish on your toenails, you need to take it off after 2 weeks. Which, of course, I've not done.
No, I leave it on for like years.
Yeah.
You let it grow out and then you like chuckle at the growth. And then you're like, yeah. Oh, my nails are like, they're like clothespins now. And then you have to cut them all off.
Yep. I've done all those things.
All right. Well, foot care. Look, I do think foot care is really important. And I also like just the simple act of rolling out the bottom of my foot on like a little ball, I think is really key. You know, like I was suffering from, I forget what it's called, but massive cramping in my feet for like the first year after my second child was born. And learning how to really like take care of the muscles in my feet was fascinating.
Go on.
I had just, you know how like there are parts of your body that you're used to hurting?
Yes.
Like, oh, my lower back always hurts, or like, oh, I always have ankle pain. Like that's just my lot in life. Well, bottom of the foot pain was not something I had ever even considered. And I have had to, you know, like doing actual stretching in your feet is very key. Let's get into feet. You know what?
Kate, maybe, you know what? I've been waiting for this.
Maybe self-isolation has really made me lose it because I want to get into feet. And great. I hate them so much.
I am ready for this. I'm here for this. Let's do this.
Well, also, you know, there is a weird thing about polish, and I don't feel this as much on my hands, but when I get my nails done a lot, I feel this way where I then, like, I can't even look at my feet without nail polish on. Like, they feel really weird. And do you find this, like, you get so accustomed to having
I broke myself of that for my fingers, but I definitely do feel that still on my toes.
Yeah, it's really hard. I can't remember the last time I had bare toes.
It's gonna be a whole new world.
Well, I'm ready to get into it. The nice thing is I don't see anybody right now, so you know, I can really experiment without having to show off the goods, as you will.
Yes, and I do. Yeah, I'd love to hear suggestions for you and just like general suggestions for foot care from people.
Talk to me how you take care of your feet. Wait, I said that wrong. Talk to me about how you take care of your feet. How do you care for them? What do you do?
What? And,
you know, if someone has a convincing argument in favor of the baby feet foot mask, I'd love to hear it. It seems like it removes a lot of like calluses that you might want. And also the process seems pretty gross.
I have never been, that has never appealed to me.
Well, soft feet seem like counterintuitive to me. Like you want your feet to be, the skin on your feet to be firm. Right? Like,
yeah, that's a good
soft feet.
That's a good point. That is a really good point.
But now, of course, I'm Googling baby foot exfoliation, foot peel. So talk to me if you've done this. How do you take care of your muscles, your bones, foot
everything.
Health? Let's get everything. Into foot health. And look, if you have a comfortable shoe you want to recommend, I'm open to hearing that too. Remember Dory had to have shoes with wide toe boxes?
Yes. And, you know, I haven't really been wearing them that much because, like, I don't wear shoes that much.
Did you ever land on a wide toe box shoe?
I bought a pair of Lems and I like them. I don't love them.
Okay.
But I wonder Lems. If they need to be worn in a little bit. And okay. I just haven't like had occasion to order them. But yeah.
Well, again, I welcome any orthopedic shoe recommendations as well.
I do too.
Oh, Dory.
Yes, Kate.
Should we take a little break here?
Let's do that because when we come back.
Oh my gosh.
We are talking to, I mean, definitely the most accomplished, the oldest, and
the most iconic?
The most iconic guest we've ever had.
Secretary of State Madeleine Albright. And can I just say we were both nervous for this interview, excited. I started to get choked up at the beginning of it mm-hmm. because it was just so thrilling to get to Madam Secretary. I mean, it was really amazing. And she was just so delightful to get to talk to. So this was
so
really, this was a fun one for us.
Yeah. So we hope you enjoy it too. All right. Be right back.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I think it's safe to say that we have suffered through bras. We've been uncomfortable in them. We've devoted whole episodes to finding good ones. But I'm here to say enough is enough. Enough.
I mean, drawn the line. Dory, have I ever told you what I did in college when I needed a bra to wear with a fancy dress?
What?
I cut the top of pantyhose and then I duct taped that to my chest.
Oh, that sounds uncomfortable.
Because I didn't have honey love when I was in college.
No. Well, we are here to say no more being uncomfortable.
No.
With Honey Love's bras, you will wonder why it took so long to make something so comfortable and so supportive. There's no underwire, but through some kind of wonderful magic, they managed to not sacrifice lift, all while making it in a fabric that's so comfortable, you barely know it's there, especially the crossover bra. I wear one of these almost every day. I'm wearing one right now because it's so comfortable and it easily fits into my life. But if you like a breathable and versatile legging, Honey Love has you covered on that front too. Plus, they have tanks, shapewear, and their V-bra that has molded cups, still without the underwire, to keep you from getting that dreaded uniboob effect other more relaxed bras tend to give you. So treat yourself to the best bras and shapewear on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/forever. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off, honeylove.com/forever. After your purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them, and please support our show and tell them we send you. Treat yourself to Honeylove because you deserve it.
You know, one thing I think is really kind of interesting about skin, my skin, but all skin, is that like what it needs now in my 40s is not what I needed in my 30s.
Totally.
Definitely not what I needed in my 20s.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But like, how are you supposed to know what your skin needs?
It's hard. It's hard to know.
Especially when there's just like so many products out there. The overwhelm is real. It's a struggle to even know how to get the results you want, what products to start with. This is why we're super excited to partner with Apostrophe. Apostrophe is a prescription skincare company that offers science-backed medications that are clinically proven to help. I have used Apostrophe. I love it. They will pair you with a board-certified dermatologist who literally creates a personalized treatment plan for your skin. I have done this a few times now. It is so easy to do their online consultation. You upload photos. And like within a few weeks, I had done the consultation and received my treatment plan and my product.
Amazing.
And that is how I became a tretinoin gal. I love the tretinoin that they sent me. I love their sunscreen. Both products have been amazing on my skin. And you, Forever 35 listeners, can get a special deal from Apostrophe. You can get your first visit for only $5. That's at apostrophe.com/forever35 when you use our code forever35. Now, that is a savings of $15. I like that. This code is only available to Forever 35 listeners. So to get started, just go to apostrophe.com/forever35 and click get started. And then use our code forever35 at sign up and you will get your first visit for only $5. Thank you, Apostrophe, for sponsoring this episode.
Our guest today is Madeleine Albright. You may know her as the former Secretary of State, but she is also a professor, author, diplomat, and businesswoman. In 1997, she was named the first female Secretary of State and became, at that time, the highest ranking woman in the history of U.S. government. From 1993 to 1997, Dr. Albright served as the U.S. Permanent Representative to the United Nations and was a member of the President's Cabinet. She is a professor in the practice of diplomacy at the Georgetown University School of Foreign Service. Dr. Albright is chair of Albright Stonebridge Group, a global strategy firm, and chair of Albright Capital Management LLC, an investment advisory firm focused on emerging markets. She also chairs the National Democratic Institute, serves as the president of the Truman Scholarship Foundation, and is a member of the U.S. Defense Department's Defense Policy Board. And in 2012, she was chosen by President Obama to receive the nation's highest civilian honor, the Presidential Medal of Freedom, in recognition of her contributions to international peace and democracy. You are definitely the most accomplished guest we've ever had on Forever 35. Very happy to have you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the nice introduction.
Yeah. And by the way, I'm Dory, and this is my co-host, Kate.
Hi there.
Hello. Hello.
Dory, can we start with the first question that I had?
We may.
Okay. So, Secretary Albright, in the preface of your book, I love the how you describe what's next as a favorite question to ask yourself and one that you asked as you ended your tenure as Secretary of State. And you also wrote in the first chapter, and we should specify your new book is Hell and Other Destinations. And that is the wonderful book I'm referring to.
Yes.
You said that you intended on making the stage of your life after being Secretary of State even more interesting than your last, and that you said hell yes to everything. And we'd love to know what advice you have for women who feel like it's too late for them to try something new, they're too scared to take a risk or forge a new path, whether it be personal or professional.
Well, I actually think it's never too late. And I'm frankly trying to prove that. But basically, I do think that women can and should see their life coming in segments, some of it due to biology. And kind of dividing things up, and that women can do everything. It just doesn't have to all be at the same time. And I do think that we are very hard on each other and very hard on ourselves. And so I'm trying to show that you, I've had moments like that, but that I decided that I would always be curious and that I would make a difference, that is something that I wanted to do, and that I would not be afraid to try new things.
That kind of reminds me of what you wrote about in your memoirs about the end of your marriage. And in this book, you write something that really struck a chord with both of us, which is the word I began to assume a deeper, richer shape. Can you speak about this experience, especially for listeners who may be experiencing the end of a marriage or relationship?
Well, it's interesting because it's something that became very clear all of a sudden, that everything that I'd been doing was we. I had gone to college. I got one of the things that I've talked about in my book, and also was that having gone to a women's college, and we had a commencement speaker, the Secretary of Defense at the time, because his daughter was in our class, and we kind of remember his commencement speech slightly differently in words, but the gist was, your main responsibility is to get married and raise children. And so I waited a long time to get married, 3 days after graduation. And I had been we for a long time because I'd been, there was this term in those days, pinned by my husband, my about to be husband, as a fraternity pin, and then engaged. And I started the we business a very long time in terms of always thinking of decisions about how we would do things and what we ate and what we did. And all of a sudden, I was an I, and it was strange because basically it seemed very self-centered, but it was important to begin to think of what I needed to do in order to move forward and be a good mother. So it makes a difference. And I think that this probably happens to many women, is to think about what you want to do in terms of your vocation or your thoughts or your desires to make a difference or any number of reasons, and that we can be eyes, and it is something that is not bad to be. It's essential, actually, in many ways.
You do write a lot about friendship in your book, and it's also a topic that comes up on our show. And I guess we're wondering, you've had this one best friend from the time you were in college, I guess two best friends. And how do you maintain those friendships? And how do you cut ties with toxic friends?
Well, I tell you, I mean, one especially, Winnie Freund, was somebody that it turns out we had even gone to grade school together. And we kind of reacquainted ourselves with each other at Wellesley because we were sitting next to each other in class. And then we have been friends ever since because of not just where we lived near each other, because for a certain stage we did, but mainly because we have a lot in common. We try to help each other, and it's just an incredible relationship. And we have stayed in touch either by doing things together. And I talked in my book about doing something at Wellesley, which is an institute that Winnie helped me, continues to help me with, but we travel together, but we also talk on the phone and share a lot of thoughts very quickly. And it does require, I think, friendship doesn't just happen automatically. It needs something where you care about it and you really do cherish it in a way that you reach out and you're happy to be reached out to, frankly.
How do you deal with toxic friends? Have you ever had to cut ties with people or end a relationship that wasn't working for you as a friendship?
Well, there are people that it becomes very clear that they really only want to be friends at a particular time in your life when they can use the friendship. And so you just kind of are very quick in phone calls or just decide that I don't think I've ever kind of said to somebody, I don't want to be friends with you anymore. It's just something that happens by virtue of being the opposite of not staying in touch and thinking that it's not worth reaching out. But I haven't done it very often because one of the things in my life, when you do have to spend a lot of time with people that are part of your life in terms of whether it's on a board or in business or whatever. And so there's a difference between an acquaintance and a friend. And there's certainly, I've got an awful lot of acquaintances, and I do truly do believe in friendship and the importance of those relationships. My whole life in many ways is based on relationships. And one of the issues at this moment, I have to tell you, I'm an extrovert. I really love being with people, and I'm trying to learn to be an introvert, not doing very well. But I have spent a lot of time Zooming and talking on the phone and doing various ways to connect in what I would say is a modern or a way, you know, techie.
It's interesting you mentioned that because the pandemic, I'm also an extrovert, and it really is challenging not getting to make contact with people, and it kind of zaps something in your soul.
The part that's weird, and I don't know whether you have this experience, I have been doing a lot of Zooming, and I teach via Zoom, and you can actually see the people, but you don't get what an extrovert needs are the vibes, you know, and the energy that you get from being with people. So it's an act of will, I think. And one of the things that I've learned, and in my book, I really did make some comparisons about or talk about what it was like to be a child during World War II in England. And I was just a little girl, but I now think about what my parents did, which was they had no control over whether the Germans were bombing. The only thing they had control over was their mood. And I think now we don't have any control over the virus. The only thing that we have control over is our mood. So that's what I work on.
We were thinking about the pandemic with regards to your routine, because you describe in your book that you have this very dedicated exercise routine where you get up very early, and you've been doing this for 20 years, and you go on to describe your affinity for routine. And we'd like to know, why do you find consistency like this enhances your well-being? And has having this routine helped during the global pandemic, or has it been kind of disorienting to not be able to follow your regular routine?
Well, what is interesting is I found this wonderful trainer, and I have spent a lot of time with her in a routine, Margot Carper. And so it has been part of my routine. We are not doing that now. I have been trying. In fact, I just got off the treadmill and I have been trying to do a variety of exercises, but I'm not as good at it as I should be. But I do know it's essential, and especially given my age and what's going on. So I'm trying, but I'm not as good about it. And routines really do help.
You share this story, I think it's at the beginning of your book, and it's just a very quick anecdote, but I highlighted it and circled it with like three exclamation points. And you share this story about a woman who told you that you were, quote, brave for not getting a facelift. And you share a hilarious retort, which was that you wanted to say to her that she was brave for going out with whatever surgical work she had done, which really made me chuckle. But could you kind of speak to the unwinnable standards of beauty that get placed upon women, especially women who are in the public eye?
I have to say that one of the reasons I told that story and others is that I think often what happens is people are trying to say something nice and it doesn't come out that way. So there are times when I've been with somebody who says, "You remind me of my grandmother. She's 106 or whatever. But this particular story was by somebody where people had actually had a lot of work on their faces. And so at a cocktail party, she looked at me and said, "You're really brave not to have had a facelift." And I thought, I actually didn't know what to say right off the bat. And it was only later that I thought of kind of rhetorical ways of answering it, because I was so taken aback that somebody would say that. I do think that we do put an awful lot of emphasis on how people look and looking young when you're way past that. And I think that one of the things, if one can see some good to what is going on now, is I think that people are thinking about their relationships with people, what's really important to them, whether having wrinkles when you're socially distancing doesn't seem to make much difference, or you know, dealing with a terrible virus. And I think that I have a very strange thing to say. I was just watching television with a lot of nurses and people who have been on the front lines and how brave they are. And there were a lot of pictures of them without their masks on, and they all have new lines on their face, which is from the masks. And I think it will be a sign of honor that people that have given so much to us. So it was just a thought I had, that this was a wrinkle that was very well earned. Mm.
That's really powerful. You mentioned being on the treadmill, but I'm wondering what some of your other kind of everyday self-care routines or practices are.
Well, I don't have a lot. I mean, I do fix my face and put some cream on and things. I try very hard to look decent. And one of the routines, frankly, one of the things that had never occurred to me was that I would ever care about my clothes. But when I went to the United Nations, Jean Kirkpatrick, who had preceded me there, and we got to be friends, and she said, "Madeline, you have to get rid of your clothes and go buy some new clothes," which was a great suggestion and an excuse. And so I do like to get dressed up, and I like to think about what I'm wearing. And I think that what I miss now is I don't have to do that, but I have decided that I am going to look decent every day, and that it does make a difference in terms of how you feel about yourself. And then, of course, I have this whole thing with my pins, and so that gives me some fun in thinking about what I'm going to wear or do.
Yeah, your pins have been, I mean, an incredible topic for your whole professional career. And I was wondering, do you consider that part of kind of your self-care practice in terms of making the choice of which pin to wear, or what kind of message you want to send with each pin, or even just the act, the recurring act of doing it?
Well, it has gotten to be that way. So I think the part that I don't know whether you know the whole story, but what really did happen, I do like jewelry, and I get to the United Nations, and I was what's known as an instructed ambassador. And the problem was that after the Gulf War, the ceasefire was translated into a series of sanctions resolutions, and my instructions were to make sure the sanctions stayed on. And so I said terrible things about Saddam Hussein all the time, which he deserved because he'd invaded Kuwait. And all of a sudden, there was a poem in the papers in Baghdad comparing me to many things, but among them an unparalleled serpent. So I had a snake pin, and I wore it when we talked about Iraq. And so then all of a sudden, it kind of got to be fun, and thinking that I would wear pins in order to signal what I thought we were going to do on any given day. So on good days, I wore flowers and butterflies and balloons, and on bad days, a lot of carnivorous animals and spiders and things. And so then what happened was that people got very used to seeing me with pins. Now what has happened is when I don't wear a pin, like when I'm exercising, for instance, people say, "Why aren't you wearing a pin?" And so it has gotten to be much more of a game of choosing what I'm going to wear when. And then I have, there's a pin collection of everything which have the foreign policy stories, but that's has been traveling around the United States. So I had to start all over. And so I do have fun in terms of figuring out what I'm going to wear. And it's somewhat embarrassing to think that I actually spend time thinking about what am I going to say today with my pins.
I think it's pretty awesome, honestly. I don't think it's embarrassing at all. I think it's such a fashion is so fun, but there's also so many important messages that can come out of it. I think it's really brilliant.
Well, I turned it into a diplomatic tool and have a lot of funny stories with that. But the thing that is really funny now is what I love, given the extrovert thing, when people come up to me, whether when we used to go to airports and or out in public and say, why are you wearing that pin today? And so it has become kind of a conversation opener, which I appreciate.
Do you have one on right at this moment?
Well, I have a pin, which is that I've chosen for talking about the book. And that is that it is, since I have done some comparisons to World War II, and my father was on BBC. When I was a little girl, I listened to BBC during the war, and they would start with Beethoven's Fifth, and which they would go da-da-da-dum, which in Morse code is victory. Mm. And I have been wearing a V pin throughout the book tour. I was, when I was thinking about what I was going to wear before the whole victory thing came up, and the virus, because I don't write about the virus, but since it's now a major subject, I was going to wear a devil pin that went with the hell theme. But the V for victory against the virus is what I'm doing now.
Oh, I love that. You've given dozens of commencement speeches over the years, and this year it looks like most commencements will be canceled or at least like very scaled down. And so we were just kind of wondering, like, what would you like to tell the class of 2020 if you were going to be giving a commencement speech now? Yeah.
Well, first of all, I have to say that I wouldn't say this to them, but I feel badly for them because commencements are fun and great, and it's something you look forward to. And so this class is never going to forget that they weren't able to have that commencement. But I would say something to them, which is that they better than most generations are prepared to deal with something very new, that they are very competent, more than competent in dealing with technology. They know how to, you know, we've made kind of fun of them for being online all the time or not being social or not caring about privacy, but they are ahead of things. And I have loved teaching that I've done recently by Zoom, and I was stunned at how creative the students were. I also am, one of the hard parts about any commencement speech is how you lay a lot of responsibilities on the graduating class. But in many ways, they are the ones that are going to make the difference in the 21st century because of their knowledge and their capabilities. And I would say to them that democracy is not a spectator sport, that they do have to contribute and be a part of things, which I think they have been, and they need to be known that people my age learn from them. I have the older I get, you know, obviously the younger are my teachers, which is something that Robert Frost said. So I do think that I would be very positive, but I would lay responsibilities on them because they are going to have to live in a totally different world from where we have been.
I wanted to ask you about a moment you share in your book in which you discover your maternal grandmother's journals. It's incredibly moving, and you then go on to share her writing at the end of the book, which is just such a poignant, I have chills actually talking about it now. It's such a poignant way to end this book. Could you speak about that a little bit and what it was like for you to discover her writing. And it was fairly recently that this happened.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, it's part of a longer discovery issue. When I became ambassador to the United Nations, I started getting letters from a lot of people saying that where the facts were all wrong, but saying that they were relatives and they needed a visa or money. But they had the villages that my family came from wrong and the age, and somebody who wrote said they'd gone to high school with my father in 1915, which would have been impossible since he was born in 1909. So I ignored a lot of the letters. And just as I was being vetted to be Secretary of State, I got a letter from somebody that had all the facts right and said what had been hinted in some of the other letters that that I was of Jewish origin. And so what happened was that I then, I had just become Secretary of State, and it was very, there was somebody who wrote an article about me and my Jewish background. And so that was actually a revelation to me. And I had known after the war when we came back, because I had, my parents had, my father was with the government in exile in London. And we came back, and for me, I had pictures of myself with my grandmother, but I was 2 years old, and I certainly didn't remember her, and I kind of don't even remember asking. But I think later, when we talked about other people had grandparents, that I didn't have grandparents because they had been old and they had died. So what happened was when I lived in Washington, my father died, my mother came to live here, and she brought a lot of his stuff. And then she died, and all the papers and stuff were transferred to me, and they were in my garage and in my basement. And then I become an official that has to have security. And so the security people moved into my garage, and we moved all these papers to a storage unit. So in like 2015, 2016, I was there looking just generally through things. And all of a sudden, in a worn-out envelope, I found this journal. And it was written in Czech, and it was from my grandmother to my mother, who was in London. And it was describing what she was going through in this small town in Czechoslovakia in terms of her daily life when she wrote, there's one passage where she said, all of a sudden, we've been divided into Aryans and non-Aryans and various ways that Jews weren't able to go to other parts of the town or go shopping. But most of it was very kind of, it starts out with her saying that she wanted to let my mother know what kinds of things were going on at the time where she was. And a lot of it is just, in some ways, I describe it in the book as a message in a bottle. It was fascinating. I couldn't believe it, frankly, as I was reading it, in terms of her descriptions of what went on. And it ends, the reason I wanted it in the book is because it is a message in a bottle, and it is one generation talking to another, sharing not only experiences, but a kind of hope that I think is very important. The part that really blew my mind was that she was not old when she was taken to a concentration camp. She was 54 years old. And so I have spent time trying to put the story together of what happened to a large number of my relatives. And not long ago, with my children and grandchildren, we went to this concentration camp in the Czech Republic, Terezín, where we dedicated a plaque to the 26 members of my family that died in the Holocaust.
Wow. That must have been incredibly moving.
Well, the whole, and finding this diary, this journal, has been a very concrete sign of things, of learning things about one's past, but the message in the bottle part and the hope, you know, when we see each other or if we don't, so that you know what I've done. And there, the part that's hard is there are a lot of little references to me. I must be a very cute little girl or whatever, but anyway, very, very moving.
Well, I love that because you do talk about divine spark and why gratitude is a reason for prayer, you believe. Could you tell us a little bit more about divine spark and also just what gives you hope?
Well, I do think that, you know, I kind of kid about this, that I was raised a Catholic, married an Episcopalian, and found out I was Jewish. And so I can have my interreligious discussions. But I really do think that it is important to understand what we're supposed to be doing on Earth and the divine spark, and having a reason for doing things in terms of making sure that others are taken care of and that there is community in understanding what we are supposed to be doing, and having a goal, and having a sense that we aren't here just as an accident, that we are expected to play active roles.
Well, that seems like a really nice note to end on. It was such a pleasure getting to talk to you. And your book is Hell and Other Destinations, and it is available now. And Kate and I both loved it, so everyone should read it.
It shouldn't be so hard or expensive to find furniture that exudes elegance, sophistication, and a touch of luxury. And we're happy to say that today's sponsor, Article, makes getting quality furniture as easy as checking the pieces out online. Thanks to their online-only model, they have some really great manageable prices. Article believes in delightful design for every home, so you can get to creating a space that truly reflects your personal style. I now have a space that is quite outfitted in Article, and I have to tell you how not just like seamless, but truly enjoyable the ordering and shipping process was. It was extremely fast. It's affordable, very convenient because I got to pick the delivery time, and they sent me updates every step of the way. It was like they knew that I was an obsessive checker on shipping, and they were like, we see you, we honor you, and we're going to support that journey for you. As Dory knows, I have a beautiful bench from Article right when you enter my home. I have some gorgeous planters, and then my favorite, my kind of like surprise favorite piece from Article are the blankets I have gotten for my sofa that my family all hogs.
Oh.
Including my dogs. My dogs love these blankets so they're like throws on our couch. The dogs try to monopolize them.
Dogs are such blanket hogs.
They know a soft blanket when they see one, I gotta say. So their endorsement, honestly, their endorsement says more than mine ever could. That's how soft these blankets are. Article has all kind of curated furniture from mid-century modern or coastal to industrial, Scandi, boho. So no matter what style you're leaning toward, they have got something for you. And you could really do like every room in your house in a different kind of style if you wanted to. And with Article's team of designers, no matter what piece or how many, you're sure to find the perfect balance between style, quality, and price. Article is offering Forever 35 listeners $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. To claim it, visit article.com/forever, and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout. That's article.com/forever for $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Okay. Well, Dory, I just want to reiterate how much we absolutely loved talking to Secretary Albright. That was just
yes.
It was
what
cool.
What a wonderful like opportunity. I don't know. It was just very cool to talk to her.
And her book is so inspirational because anytime I've ever felt like, oh, what am I doing with my life? Just the consistent way in which she keeps like digging further into who she is and what she's passionate
yes.
about is so inspiring.
Well, and one other thing, and then we can move on, but one other thing that I also really like about her is I feel like she owns her mistakes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, definitely.
And I like that. I like that.
I'm still learning how to do that.
I mean, aren't we all?
Yeah, I mean, that's true. So, Dory.
Yes.
Talk to me about cream puffs.
cream puffs. Well,
last week,
my intention was to actually make the cream puffs that I learned about in the online baking class that I took. And guess what? I made the cream puffs.
And how did they taste?
They were delicious.
Ooh.
They were a little lopsided, but they were delicious.
Lopsidedness doesn't affect the...
They were great.
My husband says they were great.
Your other taste tester.
My other taste tester approved.
Thank you, Matt. I needed some outside opinion.
And I also made gougères, which are basically like little cheese puff things made with the same dough that you use for the cream puffs, and those were also delicious.
What kind of cheese do you use in a gougère?
I used Gruyere.
Oh my god, that sounds so good.
It was really, you know what? It was really good.
I might take one of these classes.
I highly recommend.
I might try one. Okay.
She is such a delight. And she just released a new schedule of classes on her website, MollyJWilk.com. And she's teaching like 6 or 7 classes, each one with a different focus. So,
I mean, that's so out of my comfort zone. I know it was out of your comfort zone.
It was
so
very far outside of my comfort zone. Yeah, yes.
So cool. Okay. Well, what is on your whiteboard for this week?
Well, you know, kind of like what I was talking about on Here For You the other day. I want to exercise every day. I feel like I just feel so much better when I do it first thing in the morning. And I just need to like acknowledge that, come to terms with that, make time for that, like work it into my schedule.
Yeah.
And make it a priority.
You know, it was interesting at the start of this safe at home, secure at home, whatever we're doing, being at home.
Safer
at home. Thank you. I had to really work into like my family's brain that it from 8 to 9, leave me alone Monday through Friday.
Yeah.
And like even today, one of my kids came out while I was exercising and I was like, This is the only time I have to myself. I was kind of lost it, but I was like, please, I can talk to you in 30 minutes about if you can have gum. But right now, like I need the space, but like for the most part, it now has become like known in my home that this is my time. So I feel like you make it a routine. It starts to feel organic.
Yes. Yes. What is on tap for you this week, and what were you going to do last week?
All right, last week I committed once again. I did a double, like this was the second week in a row that I chose this for my intention, which was scheduling therapy.
Okay. And
guess who has therapy in 3 hours? That would be me. That would be me. I did
it. Yes.
I did it. So that felt awesome. I'm really excited to see my therapist and to have a nice therapy session. So this week, I'm kind of swapping intentions with you a little bit. I want to try to make my own pasta. You know, I've mentioned that I'm doing a little bit of panic shopping. And one thing I panic shopped is a pasta maker.
Yeah.
So that attaches to my KitchenAid mixer.
Yep, yep, yep.
You know, I justify it by it being on sale. And I was like, I've always wanted to make my own pasta. Here we go. But one thing I was thinking about is that I'm doing a lot of cooking with my kids as part of quote unquote school. And it has been really cool because they are learning math by doing all the measuring. And like we've been doing it a lot. And also then we make food that we get to eat and enjoy. So I thought it could be something that I do with my kids, try to incorporate it as part of their like larger learning experience right now at home. And also like tapping into my Italian roots, which is just becoming more and more important to me as I get older. So I've never made my own pasta. I've never even understood how to do it, but I'm almost 41 and I think I'm ready.
I'm excited for you.
So hopefully this time next week, I will have made my own pasta.
Do you know what kind of pasta you're going to make?
No clue. Probably a basic linguine. I have to actually open up the attachment and figure it out. I'm using a Marcella Hazan. I'm not totally sure how to say her last name. Recipe for my pasta. I'm going to try out one of her recipes.
Cool.
Yeah. So I will report back. I'm even if it's, if I mess up, I'm sure it will still taste okay. Like, I'm sure it'll still be
yeah.
fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there we go.
Oh, I'm excited for you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
You're so welcome. All right. Well, I think that brings us to the end. Butt masks never 40, 35 forever.
Butt masks never, foot masks never, ooh. 35 forever.
Wow. And Forever 35 is hosted and produced by me, Dori Shafrir, and you, Kate Spencer, and produced and edited by Sammy Junio, and Sam Reed is our project manager. We'll talk to you very soon.
Yeah, and we really thank you for listening.
Yep.
Bye.
Bye.